This is Karen Werner, and I'm thrilled to share a work from the Radio Art Archive by Sophia Lerner. The piece is called The Machine for Living In and was produced in 1993. The piece was commissioned by the Australian Broadcast Corporation radio show The Listening Room, and Sophia Lerner recorded and composed it entirely on analog tape. Sophia Lerner spent many years in Australia working with creative radio and also spent time in India, where she co-founded the Delhi Listening Group. She is now based in Finland and continues to pursue her interest in distributed participatory radio. The Machine for Living In takes its title from artist-architect Le Corbusier. Here is some of the introductory text that accompanied the piece when it first aired. The way we live in our most intimate space, our home, borders on the way we inhabit time. Through habits and routines, through the protracted moment of a daydream, we dwell. The Machine for Living In is 33 minutes long.
I might have dreams of myself being in a home or in a house. And a common home that I might dream of is one I was living in when I was 11 or 12, which I suppose I remember because it was a happy time of my life. Home is the place I am.
I guess what made that a home was the fact that everybody was home.
Something.
The whole family.
That you,
my two brothers, my two sisters, and myself, and my mother and father.
Hmm. Oh my God, this house is... Like,
it has separate
lead lights. Everything is brown. Brown.
I love the high ceiling.
The carpet is brown. It's just, in lots of ways, the most ugly as hell.
Which also doubles as a living room.
And small rainbows.
It was the smallest block in the neighbourhood.
Or someone just carrying their wares around.
Blues.
Humble Federation cottage.
Because the windows first houses are the grounds of our first experience. Crawling about at floor level, and room by room, we discover laws that we will apply later to the world at large. A secret machinery gets to work in us, a hidden industry of the senses and the spirit, whose busy handling and hearing and overhearing is our second birth into the world, into that particular embodiment that is a household and a house. Living and dwelling. One stresses the temporal aspect and the other the spatial aspect of being. To dwell means to draw out of the city's matrix a dreamlike stuff, to spin threads from it, to use these to form a warp harnessed to the city, and to weave action into this warp. Even our thoughts must be woven into this warp, unless we want to disconnect them from the fabric of life. Most people today do not dwell in the place where they spend their days and leave no traces where they spend their nights. They spend their days next to the telephone and their nights garaged next to their cars. Now we are at home. But home does not pre-exist. It was necessary to draw a circle around that uncertain and fragile centre, to organise a limited space. The forces of chaos are kept outside as much as possible, and the interior space protects the germinal forces of a task to fulfil or a deed to do.
Always the banal things like the domestics, that there's always eating and showering and garbaging. going on, and all these places are locked into a grid of council services that take rubbish away and bottle collections away and papers away. So it's always the point of contention, really, within a house. Yet they're very little things that are very easy to deal with, yet for some reason they always seem to be the things that become overlooked in terms of sharing living space with other people. And normally when those things are achieved, then you find that the energy flows a lot better, just because there's not those little spikes of things, that there's dishes in the sink that have been there for 3 days and so-and-so's done the dishes and so-and-so's done the dishes, so neither of them feel like they're their dishes. And so they won't feel like they're their dishes, yet they will continue to add to the dishes, and so the dish problem gets bigger and bigger and bigger, and you've got this standoff situation where it's everything's building to a head until somebody kind of...
In any way, you don't want to be landed in that role of being the only one that's keeping things clean, because then you get taken advantage of and you end up doing the whole thing all the time.
There are technologies for providing hot and cold water and for getting rid of it. There are telephone systems and cable television systems. Unseen waves carry radio and television signals.
I don't want to talk to Dad.
I'm special.
Lots of imagination.
Are you hoping?
I was hoping it was...
Electricity powers pumps, motors, furnaces, air conditioners, toasters and hair dryers. The house is full of automated devices which turn these machines on and off, regulate the heat and cold, or simply open the garage door. Remove technology from the modern house and many would consider it uninhabitable. Cut off the power that fuels the machines for long enough and the dwelling must be evacuated.
And the outside drain just started spewing raw sewage all over the backyard. And it just worked on my imagination all day, and I just didn't want to come home. That happening sort of made me feel really insecure for that day about the sanctity of my home, you know, that these telluric forces can come up from under the ground and affect my environment and I've got no control over them. That's the situation that you always live in a city, that you don't have control over your environment because you're totally dependent on the sewage system working and you're totally dependent on the electricity and the gas and the telephone working. All these different things that are coordinated and controlled by somebody else really affect your life. And how I live within the space that I pay rent for is a way of controlling part of my environment, a space that I'm in control of.
I mean, it's the place where in a world or in a life where lots of things can go awry. And up here, this is stability. Once I'm here, virtually the only thing that can interrupt. And oftentimes it's just more of life. It's a chance encounter, or it's a catch-up call, or it's a call to work, or it's a fuck-up. But it doesn't propel me to motion.
The house shelters daydreaming. The house protects the dreamer. The house allows one to dream in peace. The house is one of the greatest powers of integration for thoughts, memories, and dreams.
Reverie, that's an interesting word. Reverie, wow. Isn't like reverie like celebration?
You're thinking of revelry.
I'm going to look in the dictionary.
Go on.
VWX. Reverie or reverie, reverential, reverent. Reverie or reverie. An actual state of absent-minded daydream. Oh, you're right, yeah. Is this tape rolling?
Just drift, and just drift, and just drift. Not doing anything in particular, allowing myself to drift from one part of the room or the flat to another, allowing my attention to be drawn into different things. It's sort of a way of grounding and centering and calming and just being in a space where there's no pressure on me and I can just sort of drift a little bit and just drift And that's why I like living on my own, because I can just sort of slip into reverie, just daydream, and then sort of let myself drift back up to the surface and then do something else. And just drift.
To the extent that you have become what you are, namely, in part, an automatic answering machine, it becomes necessary for questions to be asked on the order of, who answers the call of the telephone? Its reception determines its destinal arrangement, affirming that a call has taken place. But it is precisely at the moment of connection, prior to any proper signification or articulation of content, that one wonders...
Who's there? Who's there?
When I come in from work, the first thing I'd probably do is just sort of unload my pockets and everything, go to the kitchen table, and then sort of rush straight into my answering machine and see if there's any messages there. After that, then, yeah, I guess, you know, I'll go to my bedroom or something and disrobe or whatever.
I'll take a shower and drink tea and take my things from the room and tell them I'll go looking for my mail and anything to do with me and see if anybody's written to me or there's any checks in the mail or bills I have to pay or... Or, you know, warrants for arrest or whatever. So I pick up my mail and then I go to the answering machine.
Take my things to my room and tie them
in. So that's
the
information type things. And then, like, I'll take a shower and drink tea and take my things to my room and tie them in my room and organise my life. I see, like, my room as being the heart of this house for me. Like, that's the place where I feel most in control of my own reality, and I can be and do and whatever there. I have a window at the back and I can look at the trees and I can gaze at the moon, the full moon if it's about, and I can watch birds in the tree and I can actually feel like I'm not living in the inner city. I can actually feel like I'm not living
in control of my own reality, and I can watch birds in the tree in control of my own reality.
I suppose the first thing I do is come and open doors, tidy up around the place to make sure everything's in its right spot, and then I'll go and have a bath, and then I'll sit down and relax and turn television on or listen to music, and then have dinner, and then spend the rest of the evening reading or thinking about, you know, what I'm going to do tomorrow.
We put our bags down and watch TV sometimes.
Kick the ball up and down the hallway.
I don't do that.
What do you do?
Play Barbies.
Sometimes I go through stages where I socialize too much, and it's almost like I'm losing myself, and I feel the need to come back to a very quiet, calm place and just put the pieces back together, in a sense, which is a reason why my space and my home is very sacred, very important to me, because it's a means of almost reintegrating myself. I might have a really bad day where I feel completely vulnerable and very sensitive. So on a day like that, it's nice to come home and put the pieces back together. Just certain days.
Just go up to my little hideaway and and just leave them to it.
I involve myself in the outside world in a lot of different things.
And so having a fairly stable home or, you know, living space is really important for me like that. It actually allows me to engage in other things in the outside world and at a more frenetic pace. If I had a really unstable or lived in a place that I didn't like and was always thinking about moving out, I don't think I'd be able to engage in my other areas of work and interests and passions as much as I could.
When you walk in the front door and you close the front door, you have a feeling of shutting out, you know, the hassles and the hardships of the world out there, and I suppose in a sense coming into a haven.
I lived in the mud house before. And the second you go in, you feel good. No disturbances, it just grounds you. That's what it does. Living in a natural house makes you feel close to the earth, feel more intimate with yourself and your environment, and you feel like you're part of it all. Rather, you live in a place like a brick house, you just alienate it. You have to imagine a lot more, just that extra effort to relax into yourself.
I can lie in bed at night and I can hear the swooshing of cars along the street at 2 or 3 in the morning like that. And it's a very calming sound. It's just a really kind of calming sound to hear it, and it just comes and it goes and it comes and it goes. And you can hear the sirens now and again. And I find that it makes life a little bit more like a movie in a way. Lying in bed and looking at the moon and hearing the wind in the trees and hearing an ambulance siren and then imagining what that would mean and imagining somebody else's reality, and then that will spark off a memory about being in an ambulance one time and then the kind of reality I was living then and then the distance of time between that time and this time and how they're all these kind of scenes.
A cottage small is all I'm after, not one that's spacious and wide, a house that rings with joy and laughter and the one you love inside.
I hear the sound of joy. You hear this now, Belle? I hear the sound. Sun's cornet, seedy. I hear the sound of something.
Almost like it's amplified. You can just, you know, hear about Martha's sex life and Harry's jaunt with something or like. Just like, oh, God, I don't want to hear that. Sometimes it's interesting to hear all that.
And once every so often that guy sings, you know that guy, yes, the operatic guy? And there's this old lady, I think, who plays the organ and she plays all those when the saints, you know, all those sort of really weird
old
songs.
Old rollicking sort of, yeah.
Roll out the barrel, stuff like that.
Sonorous or vocal components are very important. A wall of sound, or at least a wall with a few sonic bricks in it. A child hums to summon the strength for the schoolwork she has to hand in. A housewife sings to herself, or listens to the radio as she marshals the anti-chaos forces of her work. Radios and television sets are like sound walls around every household, and they mark territories.
Sometimes I actually really enjoy turning off the radio and just listening to that ticking clock and, in a sense, I suppose, taking in the silence. Taking in the silence. The silence.
The fridge guy.
The refrigerator.
The hum in the fridge.
Oh, there goes my fridge.
You hear that sound? It's the fridge sound.
Mm.
always seemed to have a spatial read of a room and the ability to place objects in such a way that there was a free-flowing space and I could get to everything quite easily, and everything seemed to naturally fall into a place.
For instance, you have two doors in this kitchen. One door is at west, and the other one is southwest. From the feng shui point of view, the qi in this kitchen is quite good too.
There's
a porcelain. Like, of course, you know, we are powerless to change, you know, this sink and the stove because it was here already. But when we came into this flat, of course, we felt that, you know, the magnetic field that's of this flat, the magnetic field, you know, was very comfortable to us.
When I first moved into this room, I inherited this desk, and it looked like a really lovely, heavy bit of furniture that was just weighing the room down. I could almost feel the room tilting as I walked in and I looked at this desk, so I had to figure out a way where it was going to go, and I originally tried it over here, and then I tried it over by the window, and I moved it back to the wall where it was at, and then I had to move it along about 3 feet from where it stood, and
Basically, there is not much, you know, furniture, or crowded with sofas and all kinds of things. So as to know, you know, to keep the qi clear, quiet. This is how to utilize feng shui, you know, to attract certain good things into your life.
It was a strange room. It didn't have any outside windows. So it was quite an oppressive room, and so my objects just seemed to get swallowed up in it, and I never could feel that I was there in any kind of sense, and everything was very disjointed, and my objects looked very exploded and apart and not cohesed at all, and it didn't matter what I did. I tried quite a few things in that room, and it didn't matter what I did.
This bathroom, that it is in the west. So the west direction is very good, you know, for the two of us. So that's why, you know, we arranged the master bedroom here instead of over there. But if you put the bedroom over there like that, because when you open the door, the qi from outside will, you know, they're just like a sword, you know, cut you into pieces right away when you are lying there. So we put this spade, you know, in this direction so as to avoid a so-called cutting qi.
And I'd be lying in my bed thinking, wow, this feels really different, you know, lying in this bed this way rather than, you know, the other way that it was sort of yesterday. So there were different ways of using the space.
The room becomes like a machine almost, and I'm inside the machine, and I'm creating more and more working parts to this machine, and I'm putting them around and constantly juxtaposing different things and trying things different ways.
Sometimes chaos is an immense black hole in which one endeavours to fix a fragile point as a centre.
I never can find anything in it. I spend often and dry as and it's a lot of times. An indication of my headspace. When one second, the place is messy, the room is messy, I realise that my thinking is a bit cloudy and messy. And if I tidy up, I feel like I'm living longer because I'm not wasting my time looking for dumbass things that are there, that I know are there.
Then I'll put it straight back to where it came from, or those baskets.
I like things to be neat and tidy, and it upsets me if things are all messy. Tomato sauce out on the socks, and newspaper spread all over the table, and shoes in the kitchen, and socks in the lounge room, and I put everything back where it should be, like the shoes back in the bedroom, tomato sauce back in the cupboard, the salt back in the cupboard, the papers with all the other papers, and then wipe the table down.
I've always thought if you put everything back in its right place, then you know where to find it when you're looking for it next time.
The speaking cup. The fish vase. The Thai silk. The tall bottle, the Chinese dish, the snow goose, the Russian table.
What just popped into my mind is there is a kind of ritual for some people of touching their possessions, touching things that are dear to them, rifling through old letters, you know, going through your cupboards and seeing what you no longer like.
The round mirror.
It's funny that I'm moving out because even when I didn't realise I was going to move out, the last 6 months I've had a phase of just throwing out everything and being really ruthless, like chucking out things I've had for 10 years or something, even when I was a kid, thinking that's just not a part of my life anymore. I don't want that hat anymore. I don't want that letter from whoever. Getting rid of things so you're not holding on to things. I mean, while you're physically chucking things out or rearranging things, you're looking at why you're doing that and how you felt about certain things that happened in your life at that time and how you're ready to just let go of them.
The house is a field of dense affinities, laid down with an almost physical power. In the life we share with all that, in being familiar, has become essential to us, inseparable from what we are.
It was very important to put our things around, to sort of impart our senses of who we were, where we were going on that place.
Its spirit resides in ordinary objects that become, beyond the fact of presence and usefulness, the characters in a private language. Characters too in the story we are living.
I lived in some squats over in Bondi Junction. That was the last home that I had before this place. And that was about 8 houses that we had there. I found that there was always a lot of people coming and going, and I don't know, if you're renting a place, it seems like it's like you're not under constant threat that you're going to get thrown out. So in a way, it's a bit more stable and settled. But it's also a lot harder financially if you're on a low income, especially since the rents are so high.
Well, looks like it hasn't been lived in for quite a while, but looks very livable still. I mean, we just walked up the stairs. They didn't collapse. It's not a derelict house, it's usable. But it looks as though all the facilities like water and gas and electricity have been disconnected. So that's probably one of the first things we're going to have to do. To leave places like this empty when they're livable, when there's all these people homeless, is sort of negligent, bordering on criminal.
1-2, 1-2.
Oh, okay, the police are here. Let's
get... Yeah, how many are there this time? Just one squad car? One van, two, please.
We had an agreement with the council that they weren't liable for any injuries and that they would give us 48 hours notice and we would leave if they'd sold it or if they had plans to develop it, which was what happened. They gave us all notice. They ended up just pulling them down and now it's a big empty block. I think it got sold for $11 million to some developers or something.
This wall will come down, so all of this space will be open. And this wall here will also come down, so it'll be a much area, more open space. And this room is here. Well, the hall has been totally. This wall is being pushed out, and this room, the doors have been unlined, and this room is going to actually be a sort of extension of the kitchen. It'll be like a little. Sort of like a little sunroom, I suppose, with this wall. This wall will come down, so all of this space will be open. And this wall here will come down, so it'll be a much area, totally open space. Totally unpicked, as in the walls have been unlined, and this room is going to actually be... This wall is being pushed out, so this room will be the dining kitchen.
through, right from their side of the house into our side of the house, and knocked the plaster off all of our wall onto the floor, the only room that we'd actually painted.
The walls are there, you know, I can feel it, but I think myself beyond it sometimes, and that's how I can get my relaxation.
My house is diaphanous, but it is not of glass. It is more of the nature of vapour. Its walls contract and expand as I desire. At times, I draw them close about me like protective armour, but at others, I let the walls of my house blossom out in their own space, which is infinitely extensible.
Yeah, it's very much a fantasy. It's not something that I think I'd particularly want to have. But it's just this little space that I can create sometimes to relax in, I guess.
Sort of getting all these different types of houses in my head.
A dream home.
And it's a sort of house that you can feel like you can just go in and feel really comfortable. You don't have to worry about where things are. But it still has a sense of order.
Sort of getting all these different types of houses in my head.
In having a vision of a dream home, I guess it comes out of all those images that are flashed up at you.
Freestanding. Mainly wooden.
Glassed front door.
With a view.
Yeah. Sort of maybe polished floors.
Carpet even in parts.
Carpet, spacious lounges, you know, sort of coffee tables.
Couches.
So there's this thing of what a home might be, or, you know,
nostalgia.
Yeah, or even something in the future too, you know, like this, maybe this sort of constant thing of an ideal home that is somewhere, but it's always in that other space that we don't inhabit, you know. We don't inhabit that ideal home, and the home is what we make it, in a sense, and in that way it is ideal for us.
You just heard The Machine for Living In by Sophia Lerner. To learn more about this piece, and to learn about many other examples of radio art, please visit the Wave Farm Radio Art Archive at wavefarm.org.